Welcome to Urban Dharma, the podcast where suffering is optional. Hi, this is Reverend Kusala coming to you from downtown Los Angeles from the International Buddhist Meditation Center. Well, it's been a while since I posted my last podcast. I must say life has been getting in the way. I've been busy, I've been traveling, I've been talking, but I found the time, and a couple weeks ago I gave a talk at Bishop Montgomery High School in Torrance, California, and I recorded it, and that is what you're about to hear. It'll be in two parts. This is part one of my talk at Bishop Montgomery High School in Torrance, California. Well, let's start with a few questions, and then we can get into then I can get into who I am and why I am the way I am and what I do and what Buddhism is. So, does anybody have a really good question to start off with?
They all have three.
They all have three questions.
Yeah. So take out your paper.
Okay.
And whatever question you have.
Good. So, who wants to be first? It's always hard to be first. Yeah.
Why do Buddhists need to shave their heads?
Why do Buddhists need to shave their heads?
Yeah.
Actually, there's probably two reasons. The first reason is it's in the old days, the Buddhist monks and nuns were wanderers and mendicants and beggars. And so they oftentimes lived in the forests and jungles of India. And if you had like a lot of hair, little creatures would crawl into it and make it their home. So, and then it's like really easy to wash your head and wash your face if you don't have any hair, you know, so you never need shampoo. But the main reason is for ego, because like a lot of people spend a lot of time on their hair, so they look good, and the ego is satisfied in that way. So we're trying to watch our egos and see how they drive our life and make us do the things we do. And so this is one less thing for the ego to be concerned about. So it makes it pretty easy to go through life. I wear a lot of hats, though, so keep my head warm. You know?
He likes
hats. Yeah. Yeah. So another question? Yeah.
Because I know that there's dharma in Buddhism, and then there's another kind of dharma in Hindu.
That's right.
Can you explain the difference?
Well, I can tell you what the dharma is in Buddhism. And actually it has 16 meanings, according to a very famous monk. But the two meanings most used are, number one, the teachings of the Buddha. So that would probably be a different dharma than Hinduism. And number two, the dharma would be ultimate reality. And so for some Buddhists, they feel that the teachings of the Buddha and ultimate reality could actually be the same thing.
Because I know that in Hindu, it's like almost your role in life. So it sounded almost like the ultimate reality, almost like your own ultimate reality, like your life.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting how that works because we don't have a role in life. You know, we have free choice. It's not predestined to us. But I know sometimes in Hinduism, it's almost like you have a duty to do certain things. And in Buddhism, it's pretty much you're trying to get back your choice. You know, we're conditioned from birth because our parents and the school system, and so we have all sorts of ideas and concepts about who we are, what we're supposed to do, how we're supposed to be happy and successful. And the Buddhist, in their practice, is trying to actually be free from that. Trying to not forget it, but just to transcend it and not be so motivated by that. It's really difficult.
So it's like a reality of self.
Well, it's actually the reality of no self. Yeah. So most of the religions really put a high emphasis or value on having a self. And in the religions of the book, like Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, there's like a real value on having a soul. So in Buddhism, what we say is this, you know, we might have a soul, but that's not who we really are. We might have a self, but that's not who we really are. And so what we're trying to do is find our original face before we were born. That's a famous Zen koan. Now, I'm not quite sure what that means yet, you know, but it seems to me to mean that everything I think I am proves to be wrong. So there's something else always going on. And in Buddhism, we would call that emptiness. Empty of having a self, empty of having a soul. Well, what is emptiness? Yeah, emptiness in Buddhism is really cool. It's very difficult, though, to understand. Because there's no other religion that I know of that really talks about it in this way. And what it says is this. It says that, you know, having a self is being a process. That if we try to find ourselves, or that part of ourself that's independent and unconditional, that's not subject to any of the conditions in our life, that we will always fail. That everything we come in contact with in mind and body is a conditional process. It means other things are necessary for that to happen. So what Buddhism says that we are empty of independent existence. We are empty of independent existence. That everything is conditional and subject to change. That nothing exists independently and is unchanging. So that can be a real challenge for people who think they have a self or a permanent soul, to say, but if I don't have a real self that doesn't change, and if I don't have a real soul that doesn't change, well, then who am I? And if you guys believe in rebirth, then what gets reborn if you don't have a self or a soul? So that's really a good question. And so a Buddhist would say, well, what's being reborn is your karmic energy. That a process of karma is migrating from lifetime to lifetime. But who you are doesn't get to go. Which can really make people feel sort of bummed down. Because then they say, but if I don't get to go, why should I be a good person in this lifetime? Because it doesn't affect me in the next lifetime. Why don't I just have fun in this lifetime? And then the next lifetime I'll just be a bit more serious about the whole thing. Because there's no consequences if it's not me. And so Buddhism might say, well, you know, your life is a team sport. And you're always changing. So you were the person at 10, and you were a person at 20, and you were a different person at 30, and you were a unique person at 40, and you were a little older person at 50. And each one of those times in your life, you were actually a totally different person. You had a totally different body, and you had a totally different mind. Now you have some fragmented memories of all the people that you used to be. But those are pretty much selective memories of who we used to be and what we used to do. And sometimes people relate to us that way. They say, oh, I remember you in grade school. And now you're like 50. And you don't look anything like that person in grade school. And you sort of wonder how they even recognized you. But they have these like memories of you, of how you used to be. So now your job is to reintroduce yourself. Well, that person who was in grade school died a long time ago. We had a nice little service for them, and they're very happy being dead. But now this other person has taken their place. It's me. It's the old person. So now I have wrinkles and gray hair, and I'm thinking about Social Security, which was nothing like I was when I was in grade school. So who are we in all those different parts of our life? And what piece of us, what part of us migrates to each part of our life? And so a Buddhist would say, well, when you think stuff and say stuff and do stuff, what's happening is you're transforming energy around you. And so Buddhism gives that transformation of energy a value. You're either being skillful or unskillful. You're either creating more suffering or less suffering. And so it's that transformation of energy, karmic energy, that follows us throughout our life. And, they say, goes into the next lifetime as well. So sometimes people are born into really good families. They have like a lot of money and stuff. And you go, wow, I bet they had some really good past lives. Because they had a great rebirth this time. But then that same person could really screw up. And by the time they're 30, they could be broke. They could be in jail. They could be addicted to drugs. And you say, whoa, what happened? You know, having such a great start. And they're only halfway through their life. And now they're all screwed up. Well, Buddhism says, you know, just because we have good karma in the past doesn't mean it's going to continue. We have to be proactive. We actually have to think skillful good thoughts. We have to say happy good things. We have to do good actions. And then that creates more karma, which will give us a better life and we'll suffer less. So we're always sort of active in our life. We're trying to connect with ourselves in a very skillful way and say, okay, do I have a choice? Can I be involved in lust or can I be involved in love? What's my choice? Do I have to feel hatred or could I feel love? What's my choice? Do I have to be greedy or could I practice generosity? Which one do I choose to do? And so as we keep choosing, hopefully skillful things, we keep changing. And so from this lifetime, we might have had like 100 different lives. And now that transformation of energy then goes to the next lifetime and we start again. And then we keep changing in that lifetime too. So when you try to find the person who's in each part of our life in this one lifetime and the person who goes to the next lifetime, a Buddhist would say you can't find anybody or anything. It's just a process that keeps going and going and going, like a river or like a waterfall. You know? Yeah. Did everybody follow that sort of? That's a really difficult concept to understand. Okay. Another question. How about do Buddhists believe in God? How many people think Buddhists believe in God? Can I get hands? Buddhists do believe in God. How many hands do I see? Not one. Okay. I guess we're all going to hell. Okay. Now, how many people think Buddhists don't believe in God? Any hands on that one? Okay, we have one hand here. We have two over here. So we have two that say Buddhists are atheists. And how many would say Buddhists don't know about God? Or how many would say Buddhists don't care about God? Any hands on that one? No hands. Yeah. Well, you know, don't know is the right answer to that. So it's interesting because most people have so many opinions, like Bernadette says, about yes or no. Buddhism is a non-theistic religion. Now, does anybody know what non-theistic means? It's a new word then, non-theistic. So atheistic would be sort of like, I don't believe in God. Theistic would be, I do believe in God. Non-theistic means, I don't know. That it's not important. So, did the Buddha believe in God? Absolutely. Does anybody think the Buddha believed in the Jewish Christian God? What do you think? No, probably not, huh? Because he was a Hindu, so he believed in many gods, a lot of gods. He believed in the hierarchy of gods, you know. And does anybody know what the top god is in Hinduism?
Brahman,
exactly. Or Brahma, they call it too, but that's the creator god. So he's like the big one, and then there's a lot of little ones below him. So the Buddha was faced with a dilemma. The Buddha said, I have come to understand that human beings suffer a lot. And they suffer their whole life. And I'm going to ask God if God can end human suffering. So now I imagine that maybe the Buddha on a full moon night went out and looked up to the sky and said, God, please end human suffering. There's no reason why humans have to suffer. And he listened for an answer and didn't hear anything. So for me, what that means is this, that the Buddha didn't look to God to end suffering. But the Buddha didn't blame God for suffering either. So now the Buddha said, well, why do humans suffer? And he spent 6 years investigating why human beings have to suffer. And when he figured it out, we call that nirvana. He achieved nirvana. He ended his own suffering. He understood how to do it. And then for 45 years, he taught other people how to end their suffering. Does anybody think that the Buddha could end your suffering? If he was in the room right now and you said, Buddha, I'm suffering, can you end my suffering? What do you think he would say? Huh? End your own suffering. He would say, I can't do it. I did it for myself. He would say, let me tell you how I ended my suffering. And now you have to work on ending your own suffering. So early Buddhism, which is what I'm talking about today, is filled with a lot of self-power. We don't usually petition the bodhisattvas, the Buddhist saints, to help us in early Buddhism. What we say is the Buddha left us the prescription on how to end our suffering. So if you become a Buddhist and want to believe in God, it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. The only thing is, if you pray to God to end your suffering, you'll probably be disappointed. Now, if you become a Buddhist and don't want to believe in God, that's perfectly okay. We don't care. And if you want to be a Buddhist and say, I don't know, that's fine too. So you have a lot of leeway in Buddhism about God. Okay, so do Buddhists go to heaven? Anybody have any ideas on that? What do you think? After what I've just said, do you think we go to heaven? What do you think? Yes or no?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't really know.
If you're a Christian and don't believe in God, do you go to heaven?
I think it just depends on if you're a good person or if you think that you are.
Okay, so you think people go to heaven because they think they're going to heaven? And then some people don't go to heaven because they don't care?
No, I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So does anybody think that Buddhists go to heaven?
You said they were reborn.
They can be reborn, exactly. So does anybody think Buddhists can be reborn in heaven? What do you think?
I have kind of a question about that.
So okay.
When you're saying reborn, it's a reborn into the world as we live in today, right?
Well, it could be. I didn't really define it, did I?
Yeah, so I was saying, like, how, if you're being reborn, how does anybody get to heaven? Because you never really, I guess, die in a sense.
Not in a real sense,
yeah,
like
not
that.
Like anything of death.
Yeah, like the end.
Right. So
yeah.
The physical body dies, you're saying, and then the.
And then.
The spirit of the person goes on.
Might not have a spirit if you're a Buddhist.
So.
Karmic energy might go on.
Oh, I see.
Because we don't, that spirit thing, you know, that confuses us.
Okay.
Our spirits are rascals. They always make, you know, trouble for us, you know. So let's talk about it, because this is really interesting. How many different places can human beings live? We have Earth, and we have, it's pretty much just Earth, right? Because our bodies need Earth to live on. Our bodies need water and air, and they need food, and Earth provides all of that stuff. We also needed to be created. So somebody or something created us on Earth. Now, some people think the Big Bang theory might be a good one. Some people think God created all the people on Earth. You know what my favorite theory is? The flying spaghetti monster. If you haven't been on the internet and did a Google search for flying spaghetti monster, he's the one that started the Earth. And all the people who follow the flying spaghetti monster are pirates, and they get to wear eye patches. It's really cool. So check that out. This is an alternative theory to intelligent design. This is the flying spaghetti monster. So in Buddhism, we feel that Earth isn't the only place that exists. We feel there are heaven realms and hell realms. Now, they're not really maybe like places like Earth, but they're places that parts of us can go. So if you're a Buddhist and you want to go to heaven, you're probably thinking, I'd like to look like this in heaven, or maybe not. But our body couldn't live in heaven, according to Buddhism, because our body is sort of stuck on Earth because it has the water and it has the air and the food. And heaven may not have this kind of air, water, and food, but maybe the karmic energy, maybe the process of consciousness without the body can live in these different places. So we have like over 30 different kinds of heavens we get to go to, and we have over 30 different kinds of hells that we get to go to. We have a lot of places to go. Now you might wonder, but how can a Buddhist go to heaven if they don't believe in God? Well, a Buddhist doesn't go to heaven because of what they believe. A Buddhist goes to heaven because of what they think, what they say, and what they do, which is karma. Yeah?
You said there's 30 heavens and 30 hells. Is Earth the middle ground?
Yeah, that's actually it is. That's very good. So let me give you a brief description. It's called the six realms of existence. The first heaven is perfect. It's just the way you want it to be. It's everything you've ever wanted. The only problem with Buddhist heaven is that it's temporary. It doesn't last forever. So at some point, you're going to have to leave. And when you have to leave, you'll be suffering. So a Buddhist would say even heaven in Buddhism creates suffering because it's not forever. The second heaven is not quite as good as the first one because there's a little bit of desire attached to it. So I call this the Donald Trump heaven. If only you had another wife or another building, it would be perfect, but you never get them. Then we come to the human realm, which is where we all are, and that's the only place, except for one other place, that you can achieve nirvana. It's the only place that the teachings of the Buddha are available to us, because the teachings of the Buddha are only for human beings. Now we have the first hell realm, and we call that the animal realm. That's where your dogs and cats live. Anybody have dogs and cats? Okay. Yeah, me too. I take care of 7 feral cats. And I've got a video on YouTube of feeding the cats, so if you want to check it out. And they're the best little kitties. And it's surprising how many humans don't want to have cats as a colony in the backyard. The human colony doesn't want to have a cat colony. And I'm thinking, what is wrong with the humans? Are they, you know? But there's some reason that that happens. Now, why would I say cats and dogs and other animals live in the hell realm? Because it's described in this way. Animals only think about 4 things. They think about sleeping, they think about eating, they think about sex, and they're often confused. Now, that might sound familiar. That's how I felt sometimes. But, you know, as a human being, we can do other things. We can get wisdom. We can practice celibacy. We can fast. You know, cats will never fast if they don't have to. If you give them food, they're right there. So we have a lot more control over ourselves than animals do. And that's why we feel animals live in a hell realm, because they lack self-control. Now, the next hell realm is called the hungry ghost realm. And this is where these really giant creatures that are 10 feet tall live. And they all have these little pinholes for a mouth. And they're always hungry, and they're always trying to cram all this food to the little pinhole mouth. But they never get enough food to end the hunger. So they always have this really strong desire to eat, and they can never satisfy that desire. So we call that the hungry ghost realm. And then finally, there's this, the last hell realm is you sort of look like you do right now. You know, I mean, if you were to die today, this is how you'd look. And you'd be in this place, and it would look like heaven at first. And then all of a sudden, the trees, all the leaves would turn into razor blades, and they'd fall off the trees, and they'd come and kill you in a terrible way. And you'd cry out and scream in pain, and then you'd be resurrected right on the spot with a new body, so you could be killed again and again and again. And finally, you purify all that karma that puts you in hell, and then you get to be reborn into a higher realm. So we have a really complicated cosmology. Now, I've asked some Catholic priests and Catholic nuns about their heaven. And to be honest with you, I think our stories are better. Because we have like a lot of them, you know. And some of the Catholic priests won't even go into it. They just say, well, you know. I mean, that's no fun. You should have some really good stories about heaven and some really bad stories about hell to keep us wanting to go to heaven and not wanting to go to hell. Has that been the case for you, Bernadette, too, when you've asked about heaven and hell?
Yeah, just it's kind of this foggy, cloudy place when nobody has a real concrete idea of what we're doing other than floating around on a cloud, maybe.
Yeah. So or they imagine these, like, pearly gates and there's somebody named Peter who's playing, yeah. But nobody's, there's not a real consensus, is there?
No, it's not certain. So we kind of leave it open.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
So in Buddhism, we have like all these really good stories. And we know that heaven is up and hell is down. We can even tell you how far up heaven is and how far down hell is. That's how much we get into our stories. So we have a lot of different places we can live. But again, being a human being is the best place for a Buddhist because this is where the Dharma is available to us. This is where we can achieve our full perfection as a human being and never be reborn again in any of the realms. And that's called nirvana. So does anybody know what the problem is with creation? You were about to raise your hand. Let me ask you this. Is there a problem with creation?
A problem with creation?
Uh-huh. Is there a downside to creation?
No.
Okay, we have one no. Anybody think there's a downside to creation? We do have one, and what do you think it is?
The downside to creation? Nothing lasts forever, so it has to end somewhere.
Death.
Yeah.
Death is the downside of creation. You know, every time anything is born, it has to die. That's such a bummer. Now, you look at the tree might last 200 or 300 years, but it has to die too. How about the mountain? How long does it get to live? Sometimes 10, 20,000 years, maybe even longer. But eventually it just turns into sand, so it has to die too. So everything that's created has to die. And everything that's created has to get old. And if you're a human being, everything that's created has to get sick. Bummer. So that's what the Buddha sort of figured out. He was born, because he was born, he was going to have to get old, he was going to have to get sick, and he was going to have to die. Now, has anybody ever not died that you can think of? Anybody think of anybody that hasn't died? How about Christ? Did Christ die?
Yeah.
Even Christ died. Bummer. Now, he was resurrected, but he had to die first. So anything that lives on this earth, one day will be gone. Abraham Lincoln, you know, was his 200th birthday, you know, and he was giving a talk, and he was giving a talk, and then he sat down, and his wife Mary was sitting next to him, and Abraham Lincoln had a little tear in the side of his eye, and Mary said, "What's wrong, Abe? That was a great talk, one of your best. Why are you so sad?" And he said, "Well, I had this epiphany. I had this insight that as I looked out at the audience, I realized in 100 years, every one of them would be dead." Bummer. So you go, okay, well, that might mean, hey, we're only here a short time, let's get busy. We got a lot of stuff to do. None of us know how long we're going to be here. So the downside of creation is death. Question, you were going to ask me a question before I asked you a question.
About the heaven and hell, how far up?
How far up, yeah. I would have to get the map. We actually have a map, and it's in an Indian form of measurement, so I'm not quite sure. But pretty high up and pretty far down. Now the thing that I thought was interesting about that is even Hindus and Buddhists think heaven is up and hell is down. Now why couldn't heaven be down and hell up? What's so good about up?
Never ends.
The what?
Never ends.
It never ends, and when you go down, it does end. Good idea. I like that. I'll use that. Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay.
For when you're in hell or you're in whatever else heaven or hell, do you have the same consciousness you do when you're on earth? I mean,
No, it's going to have to be a different consciousness because we lack the human body, the human vehicle. So mind and body are connected as human beings. And we think a lot of thoughts because of our body. We think about our body as being too thin, of not being thin enough, being strong, not being strong enough, being tall, not being tall enough. So our body really affects the way our consciousness works. So when we take the body away and just have consciousness, I think we'll probably have a lot of different kinds of thoughts. Good question. Did you have a question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you answered one of my three times, but let's see. See, I understand that everything that Buddha discovered, you yourself can discover, like what you're talking about, nirvana.
So okay.
We can help you with that. What kind of things must you undergo to reach this? Like,
okay. So how do you reach nirvana?
Yeah.
What do you got to do to get to nirvana?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good question. And he said that in his very first talk, the Buddha. The very first talk that the Buddha gave was called the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. Try to spell that one.
Yeah.
It's the turning of the wheel talk, the turning of the wheel talk. And in that talk, he laid out what he had discovered. He said, the first truth that I have discovered is that human life is ultimately unsatisfactory. Now, he didn't say human life was always unsatisfactory, because there are a lot of good parts of our life that make us feel happy and give us pleasure. But he said, ultimately, human life will always be unsatisfactory. That was the first truth. He said the reason our human life will be unsatisfactory is because of desire. That we have all these desires, we have all these cravings, we have this thirst that wants to be quenched. And for some reason, we just can't figure out how to do it. So the Buddha said, we're not born with original sin, we are born with original ignorance. and delusion. We can't see the world clearly. We think things that are permanent last forever, and the Buddha said nothing lasts forever. So we see things that are unchanging as being permanent. We see things as being pretty or not pretty, beautiful or not beautiful. And those are values that humans give to things that have no value in that way at all. So is there a beautiful tree and is there an ugly tree? And some of you who are into trees might say, oh yes, the maple tree is beautiful and the pine tree is so ugly. You know, I mean, you might think something like that. And you go, but really, in nature, is there really a pretty tree or an ugly tree, or is it just a tree? And the person observing it gives it the value of being pretty or unpretty. Now, is there a downside to being a pretty tree? Yes. You're always cut down first. The ugly tree is always cut down last. So sometimes it's okay to have no value at all. So the Buddha said, yeah, we have this craving. We always want to quench this thirst, and we can't figure out how to do it. He said, the end of craving, the end of our suffering, is called nirvana. Nirvana is the end of suffering, is the end of karma, is the end of all future rebirth. And then he said, the Noble Eightfold Path is the way leading to the end of suffering. The Noble Eightfold Path. The Noble Eightfold Path is right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. Now, your teacher has this written down someplace, so you don't, maybe you don't have to write it all down. But right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. So now we can take those eight path factors and put them into three categories: personal discipline, mental purification, and wisdom. This becomes the path to nirvana. In the first category of personal discipline, we have three path factors: right speech, right action, and right livelihood. The Buddha said there are four kinds of speech that always increase suffering. They are false, harsh, malicious, gossip, and idle chatter. Those kinds of speech always increase suffering. The Buddha said there are three kinds of action that always increase suffering: killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Can anybody tell me what the problem with killing is? It what?
Causes death.
Causes death, absolutely. How hard is it to be born? How long did it take you to be born? Couple thousand? Sound like a creationist to me.
I was thinking like when I came in the world. Never mind. I know you meant like literally.
Literally.
Did you mean literally?
I meant literally. How long did it take you to be born?
Like from the time my mom walks in the hospital?
No. From the beginning of time.
Oh, that's why I said a couple thousand years.
Couple thousand years. Okay. That's another talk I'll give later. For a lot of us, it seems like a whole long time, an eternity, from the beginning of time until we were born is like a really long time. And then how long are we here? We're only here 50, 60, 70, 80 years, if we're lucky. And then how long will it be till we come back? If you're a Christian, do you ever come back?
No.
One shot. This is it. You got a lot of work to do, I tell you. So you're not here for a really long time. You're only here for a couple years, and then you're not here again forever. So if you take somebody's life, you're really not giving them a chance to be the best person they can be or to even have a life. It causes them a lot of suffering. It causes all the people that love them a lot of suffering, and it will cause you suffering if they catch you. So taking life creates a lot of suffering. How about cockroach? Does killing a cockroach create suffering?
Yeah.
That cockroach just wants to be alive too, doesn't it? And it wasn't here for a really long time either. And it even lives shorter than we do. And then it's gone forever. So anything you kill, you will be creating suffering in the world. So what do you eat now? If everything you kill creates suffering, are you going to be vegetarians? Yes, we have one yes. Okay. Well, now, all those vegetables, were they alive at one time? Are you killing those vegetables?
Yeah.
You just can't hear the broccoli scream, huh? You know? So isn't it ironic that as a human being, we have to eat things that were at one time alive, and yet the very first precept a Buddhist takes is, I will not kill. And we're going to break that every time we have food, because we're in conspiracy with all the people that brought that food to our table. Wow. So killing creates a lot of suffering. How about stealing? Does that create suffering? Does anybody own anything? Anybody have any receipts for the stuff they think they own? We do. But do we really own stuff? That's the question. Or is it just an illusion of ownership? Do we control the stuff we think we own? Probably not. Ever had a car stolen that you thought you owned until it was stolen? You know, so it came to me that maybe human beings don't own anything. Maybe we just use stuff, thinking we own it, until we can't find it, until it's stolen, or until it's broken. And then we go out and get some more stuff. And some people have so much stuff, they have storage lockers. Put the extra stuff in. Some people need to get a bigger house to put more stuff in. Isn't having stuff a lot of fun? Well, maybe not. Maybe if we have less stuff, it's more fun, because it gives us more freedom from the stuff that seems to drive our lives. But as a Buddhist, we recognize the fact that people think they own the stuff they simply use, and if you take the stuff that they think they own, they will suffer. So we try not to steal or take things that are not given, because that causes suffering. Sexual misconduct. Anybody tell me what sexual misconduct is? Rape, that's good. Okay. So there are a few things that aren't good in sex. And I tell you, when I was your age, there were a lot more things that weren't good. So, but now there are fewer things that aren't good. And maybe one day everything will be good. We don't know. But the Buddha said sexual misconduct creates a lot of suffering in the world. So he said there are four things you shouldn't do if you're a Buddhist. Want to hear those four things? Okay. The first thing, don't have sex with people that are married. Causes a lot of suffering. Second thing, don't have sex with people who are engaged. Causes a lot of suffering. Third thing, don't have sex with children. Causes a lot of suffering. Fourth thing, don't have sex with people against their will. That's all I said. Now, you would think that most people could live by those rules and be happy. But it turns out they can't. I want you to think about these rules, though. And what do these rules sort of mean in a bigger sense? These rules take into account how important the family is. You notice three of those four rules dealt with family, marriage, being engaged, and children from the marriage. Three of the four rules dealt with don't mess around with the family. The family is an important part of our community and our society. And you have to respect that, and you have to keep away from that. So, if you were a Buddhist, would it be okay to be gay? From what I just said, what do you think?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe so. Okay. And if you were a Buddhist, would it be okay not to be married? Okay, yeah. Now, I had somebody say, well, if it's okay to be gay, why do gay people suffer so much? I said, well, because they're human beings. Well, do heterosexuals suffer a lot? Yeah, they do too, because they're human beings. How about people that don't have sex? Do they suffer a lot? They do too. How about monks and nuns? Do they suffer? They do too. So really, it doesn't really matter what kind of sex you're having. What the Buddha said, if you have a desire to have sex, you too will suffer. Do you ever get past your desire to have sex? Do you think there's a certain age where you won't want to have sex anymore? What do you think? Maybe 70? A little too old to have sex, you know? Maybe 80, you know? You know, I mean, that's why they invented Viagra, isn't it? You know? So the problem with being a human being is we're going to want sex the rest of our lives. Will that activity of sex ever satisfy our desire for sex? No. It never will. You can have sex 2,000 times. Not enough. So the Buddha said, there's nothing wrong with sex. There's something wrong with the desire for sex. So we're trying to limit our desire for sex. Isn't that weird? Why would you want to limit that? Isn't everything in the world telling us to have more sex? Not less sex? Look at all the magazines and all the makeup articles and the clothing and the high-heeled shoes and all the stuff people do. And we just had Valentine's Day. Isn't that about having sex sometimes? It's also about having love, too. Is there a difference between love and lust? Anybody think difference, love and lust? Yeah. Which one is better, love or lust?
Love.
Love. Yeah. I agree, too. And the problem with lust is that it becomes possessive and manipulative and controlling. All those things that love shouldn't be. So as a Buddhist, we really encourage people to be in love. But we don't use just that one word. We have two words. We encourage people to have loving kindness. Loving kindness. Also known as metta. M-E-T-T-A. Now, the cool thing about loving kindness, and this is the way you can tell if somebody really loves you. Because sometimes you go into a relationship and you're not quite sure. Somebody really loves you if they're always kind to you. That's the deal. Love is about kindness. Love is not about control. Love is about kindness. Even if you want to leave the relationship, if they really love you, they will be kind and let you go. They really will. That's real love. The other stuff where they say you can't go, that's not love. That's lust. That's control. So the Buddha really wanted people to love each other and respect each other and respect the family unit. So that's why we have these rules, these sexual rules that really focus on family. Now, we have right livelihood. That's the third part. So the Buddha said, if you really want to be happy, if you don't want to suffer, you need to find a job that will support you and your family, but not create more suffering in the world. So how many jobs create suffering in the world? A lot. A lot of them. More than I ever thought. How about being a banker? Banking creates suffering in the world?
Yeah.
It does now, doesn't it? They had a special on last night on PBS on Frontline about the collapse of the United States banking system and how we got into the mess we're in. And do you know what bankers don't have? Bankers don't have a heart. They don't have much love. They have lust and greed, but they don't have much love. And even General Motors, who wants more money now to keep General Motors alive, do you know what they said? This was on the news yesterday. They said, we have a new plan, and if you give us the money, we're going to fire over 40,000 employees so we can make more profit. But we need you to give us the money. Now, what is wrong with this picture? We're giving them money so they can fire 40,000 people when unemployment is the highest it's been in a long time. Wouldn't you think if we gave them the money, we would say, don't fire anybody, keep them working, they need their health insurance, they need their paychecks, they probably have mortgage payments and car payments, they might have children going to school, they might need the money. We'll give you the money if you can keep these people working. Wouldn't you think that would be the way it should go? And instead, give us the money and we're going to fire 40,000 people. Isn't that weird? I couldn't believe they said that. Yeah. So, right livelihood. What's a good thing to do? Anybody have an idea of what would be a really good thing to do that would create less suffering rather than more suffering? Yes? Huh? What do you think? Less suffering rather than more suffering. Some job.
Can you come back to me later?
Okay. I'll ask you after everybody else answers. How about garbage man? Does that create less suffering or more suffering?
Well, you kind of stink when he comes by. But it takes
what's that?
Kind of smells bad when he comes by. But
he does. But what would happen if he didn't come by?
It would smell even worse because all the stuff would pile up.
All the stuff would pile up. That's right. So being a garbage man may be a good job if you're a Buddhist because you would be reducing suffering in the world. Okay. How about bus driver? More suffering, less suffering?
Less
I think less suffering. People don't have to walk as far. They get to sit in a seat. Sort of nice. How about lawyer? More suffering, less suffering?
More.
I guess it would depend on the lawyer, but generally speaking, yeah, they create some suffering in the world, don't they? How about doctors? More suffering, less suffering? Less suffering, but then there are some doctors that aren't really very good. So they might create more suffering. So isn't it interesting that as a Buddhist, we're really concerned about what kind of job we want to get? Now, if you're a Catholic, being a priest or a nun, good job, bad job? Good job. We have one person who says maybe not so good. What would it be? I mean, you would be working. Would you make any money if you're a priest or a nun? Yeah. I think they take a vow of poverty, don't they? And they take a vow of obedience, too. So they have to do stuff that they didn't want to do. But what would they be doing it for? The big guy or girl. God. They'd be working for God full time. And I sort of work for Buddha full time. You know? And do I take a vow of poverty? No. I just chose the wrong profession to make a lot of money. That's all. You know? So it's like, can we find a way to live in this world, support ourselves and our family, and create less suffering? That's what Right Livelihood is all about. Well, that's it. That was part one of my talk at Bishop Montgomery High School in Torrance, California. Hope you found it interesting. Hope you found it useful. If you'd like to know more about me, please visit my website, kusala.info. That's kusala.info. My Buddhist website is urbandharma.org. That's urbandharma, one word, .org. Pages and pages on Buddhism, Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist ethics, stories, photos. And on urbandharma.org is a page devoted to ebooks for free download. The domain name for that is buddhabooks.info. buddhabooks.info. Well, until next time, until the next podcast, be happy, be peaceful, and most of all, be free from suffering.